This podcast is brought to you by the Therapeutics Initiative, where practitioners can get a healthy dose of evidence-based drug therapy information.
Hello, I'm Alan Castles. The last time the Therapeutics Initiative discussed bisphosphonates was in 2010 when they summarized the findings from a review by an independent Spanish bulletin under the title Bisphosphonates, Do They Prevent or Cause Bone Fractures? That work stimulated the TI to carry out its own systematic review of the randomized control trial evidence of the benefits and harms of bisphosphonates. This podcast is based on Therapeutics Letter Number 83, entitled A Systematic Review of the Efficacy of Bisphosphonates. I'm joined today by Dr. Jim Wright, the Managing Director of the Therapeutics Initiative here at UBC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Alan.
Now, Jim, we're talking about the clinical efficacy of the bisphosphonates. So these are drugs such as alendronate, etidronate, and ricidronate. And if I'm reading this correctly, your review was restricted just to the effects of the drugs on fracture prevention in postmenopausal women. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Basically, that's the population where these drugs are primarily used. And we therefore looked for randomized trials of the use of these drugs for primary and secondary prevention in that population of women.
So for our audience, can you just give us a quick definition of what you mean by primary or secondary prevention?
Sure. So primary prevention is a situation where the woman has not had a previous fracture and has no evidence of compression of vertebra on an x-ray of the vertebral spine. And secondary prevention then is the opposite, where there was a previous fracture or a vertebral compression on x-ray.
So obviously a hip fracture or something like that is a significant problem, but what about the vertebral compression? Is that something that women need to worry about?
Well, women, for the most part, they're asymptomatic, so the women wouldn't know that they have it. So it's not something that would have been a clinically important event.
So basically, Jim, what kind of outcomes were you looking for?
We were looking for outcomes that have an impact on women. So as opposed to vertebral compression, which is women aren't aware of, we were looking for hard outcomes such as total mortality, total serious adverse events, hip fracture, wrist fracture, withdrawals due to adverse effects, and total withdrawal.
Right. I noticed in the review you didn't mention things like bone mineral density or, you know, what's called radiographically defined vertebral compression.
Correct. When those are referred to as fractures, it's incorrect, and because they're not fractures. And And bone mineral density is really just a surrogate marker and is not useful, really, and it doesn't have an impact on the woman.
So let's talk about what you found in your review.
So we found 33 randomized control trials that met our inclusion criteria. And this was a data set involving 25,735 women. The trials were mostly studying alendronate and ricidronate.
And what kind of surprises did you find in that data?
We were surprised that despite the large number of trials, that some of the outcomes that we were interested in were only reported in a minority of the trials. The two outcomes that assess benefit minus harm, total mortality and total serious events, were reported in 33% and 84% of the randomized patients.
So at the end of the day, did the women taking the drugs do better than those on placebo?
Not in terms of those outcomes. The total mortality and total serious adverse events were the same in the placebo group as the drug group.
Well, what about the effects then on the other things, such as hip fractures or wrist fractures?
In this case, it the outcomes were different in the primary prevention population and in the secondary prevention population. Overall, the women had a mean age of 68 years. In the primary prevention population, there was no proven reduction in hip fracture or wrist fracture.
So just to be clear, Jim, we're looking at a primary prevention population. So the women who took these drugs saw no benefit. Wouldn't that be the majority of women who are being prescribed bisphosphonates just because they've got low bone density?
That's correct. So that it is the majority, and there was no proven reduction in hip fracture or wrist fracture.
Okay, let's talk then against secondary prevention. So these are women who have been identified as having low bone density and they have, say, a previous fracture. What were the effects there?
In that population, which is a higher risk population, there were some statistically significant effects, but the effects were small. The bisphosphonates reduced hip fracture by an absolute 1% over the approximate 3 years of the trials. That means that if 100 patients were treated, only one would have a hip fracture prevented, and wrist fractures were reduced by an absolute 1.3%, meaning that if 77 women were treated for 3 years, one would have a wrist fracture prevented.
Right. So did it matter which bisphosphonates we're talking about here?
No. We tried to see if there were any differences between the bisphosphonates, but we weren't able to show any differences, so we assumed that there is it's a class effect.
So I know with any kind of review like this, there's always a risk of bias in the trials, and you try to assess this bias using the Cochrane risk of bias tool. Can you just give us a brief characterization of what that tool is about?
It's a tool that has been developed by the Cochrane to make judgments as to the risk of bias for a number of the ways that trials can be biased, so they can be biased by, you know, not being properly randomized, or loss of blinding, or loss to follow up, or selective outcome reporting. So all of those things are looked at, and then you come to an overall judgment of what is the risk of bias.
And in this case, what was your sense of the risk of bias in the review?
So our sense was that there was overall a high risk of bias. That suggests that the benefits that we're seeing are likely an exaggeration of the real benefits. So even though they're small, they're probably greater than the real benefits.
So, Jim, given the implications of what you're saying, I can't see why a woman would have her bone density tested in the first place.
Yeah, that's correct. Really, we shouldn't do tests unless it's going to change, change the decision or clinical decision that we would make. And so in the woman with no previous fracture or compression, the primary prevention woman, you're not going to treat because there's no proven benefit in terms of hard outcomes. And therefore, why would you want to get a bone mineral density? In the women who've already had a fracture or a vertebral compression, you might treat, though the benefits are very small. But again, it wouldn't that decision wouldn't change as a result of getting a bone mineral density. So there really isn't any good rationale for doing that test.
Yet women will still come to your office saying, I'm worried about the health of my bones. Is there anything that you can do to help me? What would you say to those women after you've explained the benefits and the of these particular class of drugs?
Yeah. Well, I would say that the most valuable thing that the women can do is to do weight-bearing exercise. And that's well known to improve the strength of the bones. And so And they should do that independent of whether they have strong bones or weak bones.
So just to wrap up, Jim, are there other things that you think the listener should know about this class of drugs?
Yeah, we haven't talked about the harms at all. And we are working on another review that is looking at the harms of these. And really, for the women with secondary prevention, in addition to knowing what the benefits are, the magnitude of the benefits, they would want to know what the magnitude of the harms and that we'll talk about that in the next letter.
Good. That brings us to the end of this podcast. You've been listening to a Therapeutics Initiative podcast based on newsletter number 83, which can be found on the TI's website at www.ti.ubc.ca. My name is Alan Castles. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Alan.
You've been listening to the Therapeutics Initiative podcast. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at podcast@ti.ubc.ca. You can also find our contact information and show notes on our website at www.ti.ubc.ca.